Hi folks, this is Les Cotton over in the UK, in the northwest in Lancashire. We've put this podcast together, myself and Peter Rand, David Claridge, Ralph Tong, just to highlight some of the songs we've recorded recently, a bit of discussion about them, and also highlight some of the recording methods we used. So over to David Claridge.
Right, so Sir Les Cotton, it's a culmination then of hours and hours of twiddling away in your studio. You have now finished your CD.
Absolutely, David, I have. It's been a mammoth task. I started recording the songs in 2003, wrote my first song with actual words rather than instrumental in 2003. That was where we are today. And that really started the project. And it's taken me since then until now, 2009, to actually finish it. And I sat down about 2 weeks ago and thought, it's about time we did this. So I've actually gone right back to the original tracks, the multi-tracks, and completely remixed it and remastered it. And I'm very pleased with the results. I think I've got much more clarity now than on the original demos, using the techniques that I've sort of learned over the last few months, many of which came from the Homemade Hit Show and from the Zoom forum. Real handy resource, that. And I've just sort of generally gone over it with a fine-tooth comb and got it sounding as best as I possibly can.
So would you say the clarity that you get now, is that because you've learned different things, or you've got, is it the hard, well, software rather, is it the software that you've got, or is it your knowledge?
It's more the knowledge, really, because the software and hardware are pretty much what I started off with about 2005, I think it was. I started using sort of Reaper and the stuff that I'm using now. The Pod Farm from Line 6 is really, really good.
Yeah.
I know you're using the same, aren't you?
So yeah, no, absolutely. It's brilliant.
A few of us use that, and I think Tony uses it as well, actually. And it really, really is a great piece of kit. But I'd say the biggest single thing that has improved my recordings is, well, two things actually. Not to normalise the tracks before you actually master them, just to record them with plenty of headroom. Record it so that it's not bouncing against the sort of the end stop on the meter. Just record it with about, I don't know, minus 6 dB. And that way you've got room to play around with it when you actually mix and master it. If you record it right as far as it will go, high up, you've nowhere to go, basically. If you add any effects to it, it takes it into the red.
So your guitar's on 11, the amp's on 11.
Absolutely.
It's the Spinal Tap moment.
It's the only way to fly, mate, I tell you.
Well, you gave me a handy tip about high-pass filters, etc.
Yes, yeah. I've read it in several places, but using the free EQ that comes with Reaper, Rear EQ, there's a preset in there to roll off all the frequencies below 150 hertz, and it basically gets rid of all that mud that you get in a mix. If you don't do that, all the channels, sort of all the tracks, beat with each other, and sort of you get a conglomeration of this low frequency sort of muddy effect. And if you roll off everything below 150 hertz on most tracks, it really, really does make it sparkle. You've got to be careful with it, because I think you've found that you can go too far with it and you can make it sound a little bit thin on some tracks.
Well, I think the difference between is your sort of, it's yours is a rock sound and I'm going for very much acoustic folky sound. And what I found was, yeah, you're right, I overdid it. You know, I rolled it off on virtually everything bar the bass, and just I wanted the bass to sit in that lower end, you know. But I found that there was a great gap in the middle ranges, really. So I think for me personally, when I had sort of probably a couple of acoustic guitars going, bass, I might have had some percussive thing that I, you know, mic'd, and then a vocal, and I usually do one main vocal and two harmonies. And I took it to its logical conclusion and rolled off everything, and it just sounded, you know, a bit tinny. But I think the more your mixes are more complicated than mine, Celia. So I think that's where the EQ This is what I have to learn, I think. You know, you can get away with it. If you listen to folk stuff, you know, like the old early Donovan Dylan 60s stuff, one man and a guitar, it's not a problem, is it? But it's when you get the complicated mixes, giving them their space, isn't it? It's tricky.
It's giving them the space, and also it's when you come to the mix down and the mastering, we inevitably add things like PSP Vintage Warmer or some kind of ozone or some kind of mastering tool, which by its very nature will sort of enhance all the frequencies again and boost everything. So you're kind of doing a double boost on everything. If you've got sort of muddy frequencies there, it will boost those as well.
All right, yeah.
So you've got to be careful with it because it can get sort of overwhelming in the mix. So
so you're exaggerating the mistakes as well as the good bits, I suppose.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So one question, and now you are a semi-professional CD recording artiste. How did you get the various levels between all those tracks right?
It's very, very tricky, actually, because these tracks were recorded on sort of a variety of equipment over like a 6-year period. And also, some of the vocals initially were recorded direct without the tone port, so they had a different frequency response to the ones recorded with the tone port. So I had to kind of equalise all those to make them sound as if they were recorded at the same time with the same gear. That was tricky, but basically I used the tip that I've just talked about, rolling off everything below 150 hertz, boosting very slightly the treble, adding a little bit at the top end. But the thing I found most useful is the Blue Tubes plugin, the track box it's called. There's some great presets in there, starting points for vocals. I use the male vocal preset and usually tweak the top end a little bit higher on that and maybe drop some of the bottom end down. And I find it gives a really good sound, really good sort of analog sound.
So did you do that? Did you religiously do that on every vocal track of every track? Almost as if you're dealing with the whole CD as one song, really, then?
Really,
are you
yes,
looking at
yes.
a uniformity yeah. throughout the whole CD?
Pretty much used similar settings on all the vocals on all the songs, but for the earlier stuff, like Where We Are Today, that was recorded with a different method without the tone port, so by its very nature it was a lot muddier, that. So I had to boost the treble a little bit more on that one. And cut the bass. A good tip is to, before you boost anything, cut the opposing frequency. Rather than just adding treble, first of all, cut the bass and see how that is. And then if you need some extra treble, very carefully add some.
Sir Les Cotton of Lytham, Lancashire. Thank you very much indeed.
David, it's been a pleasure.
Cheers.
A thousand words, I never met you, but I heard your laughter ringing in my ears. I never knew you, but I know your smile could melt the coldest snow. Forever summer in your I'm
So, Les, we've just listened to your record Photograph, and would you like to espouse on that latest recording of yours? So what did you like about it, Les?
Well, thank you, David. Yes, well, I like the... It's a fairly clean recording. I've used my latest sort of techniques with EQ, rolled off everything below 150 hertz on each track, and I find that makes a real difference, gives you a lot more clarity, and a little bit of compression on each track using the Blue Tubes plugin. And to master it, I use the Ozone, Isotope Ozone, which gives a nice little bit of sparkle over it, I think.
Was that a preset, Liz?
It is, yeah. It's a preset mix master, I believe I used.
Which one did you use it on, then?
On the Ozone.
On the Ozone, yeah.
Yeah, the mix master one. That stuff.
Oh, okay.
Good. Yeah.
Good stuff. But now I've tried that, as you know, Celez. I tried your removing the bottom end, and as you also know, I'm going for the folky approach to things. And what I found was, if I remove the bottom end from a sort of a sparse recording, like Ralph said, you kind of, well, I think you said it's rubbish, Ralph, didn't you?
I think that's essentially it. But, you know, removing your bottom end, which method did you use, liposuction or surgery?
Yes, it cost a fortune. Harley Street was I recommend. No. But Les, I think Les's art is he's got a brilliant pair of ears and he does things with EQ that I don't even know where to begin yet. So if only he wasn't so tight with his trade secrets, he'd let us all in on this.
One day, though,
Les, don't you? You get that clarity. I'd like to hear, what is it about, you know, the gaps between the notes being just as important as the notes and stuff like that. I want to hear a real busy mix, but be able to hone in on every instrument going. And I struggle with that, I'm afraid. Ralph, over to you.
Well,
I
struggle with countless things, but I think, yeah, Les's mixes are always absolutely spot on and have sounded professional from pretty early days of recording, from the stuff I've heard. And I think you're right, Claridge, it's that sort of clarity of if you hear the different instruments rather than that mud of, you know, jangling, poorly mic'd up guitars and, you know, overdriven swanny whistles, that kind of thing, you know. And Les always managed to get that's exactly the sound I was looking for. But yeah, there's that degree of clarity, and I think with the vocals as well, I think your vocals are getting better and better, Les. I really do.
Oh, and that's you. I reckon that's just confidence in yourself, Les. You are a singer, whereas as opposed to Pete, who is not a singer, should never get near him.
I still think Pete's got a wonderful voice, and it just, you know, it doesn't want to intimidate us by revealing his true operatic tones.
He's got the face for radio, is Pete.
Yep, that's me.
But Les, okay, on turning the EQ down then, taking the bottom end on, do you do that at recording or do you do that in the mix afterwards?
I do that in the mix afterwards. I record everything as flat as I can, really, and then add all the effects and EQ and everything else during the mix. Also, another tip is I like to mix live. A lot of people will just render the file down to a stereo master. What I do, I actually mix it using real faders. I've got an interface that connects to Reaper, and I actually mix using real faders so that I can make last-minute adjustments as I'm mixing it down. And I think that really, really helps. Gives it a very organic feel, I think, that.
And where do you stick the vocals in the mix? Do you stick that on last? Do you get all the instruments going and then plop the vocals in so you can just... You know, so they're clear, but you can hear the words, but you don't. You know, the problem I find with me is that my vocals either scream out or you've lost them completely. I don't know whether that's a level or whether that's an EQ problem.
I tend to record the vocals last. I'll if you will, put the backing track together and then record the vocals last. But a good tip I picked up from one of the forums was, when you bring your mix up, bring just the vocals up to start with. Get those at the level you're happy with, and then bring the rest of the mix up underneath that. Right. And that way you will find the vocals will always stand a little bit above the rest of the mix.
I think that technique works really well, actually. I've tried that on a few of my recordings, and I think that's often what in the past I was doing wrong. I was recording all the music, bunging all that on, and then recording the vocals, but not really adjusting the mix as a result of the extra things you add on. And that's, I think, how I used to get that mud sort of sound. Not the band mud, but, you know, mud.
Nobody wants that sound.
And, not even members of the band.
No. Yeah, you could be the new Mud.
Les, what's his name?
Les Cotton, yeah. He's involved in this chat beat. Keep up.
No. The one from Mud. Anyway.
Les Gray.
Was it? Right.
That's him.
For the viewers listening in black and white, that's Pete Randio in the background there on the Maplin's £4.99 microphone.
£6.99.
You were robbed.
No expense spent.
I should go back and ask him for the bass notes as well with it, Pete. Take that clothes peg off your nose.
Pete Rand from Merseyside.
So, I think...
Down.
So, for our... I think we're bored with talking about that record anymore, so should we move on?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right, Les, you're wonderful, and you accept wedding invitations, bar mitzvahs and funerals. Right, over to you, Ralphie Baby. I hear you have a Christmas record.
Certainly do. And
with a bullet.
Pete.
With a bullet.
Oh, yeah, definitely. 14 with a bullet. But, yeah, it seems to have been very well received. I was quite pleased because I sort of threw the lyrics together quite hastily and then built the song around just a few lyrical themes, going for every Christmas cliche in the book, but with a bit of a sort of... a mocking look at Christmas songs in general. So it's pretty cheesy chords. It's like three chords, the whole thing. There's a little cheesy penny whistle penny phrase, whistle. Which I thought, you know, touch of the old Cliff Richard Saviour's Day type thing. The chords really are sort of nicked off Slade's My Oh My, that sort of cheesy Christmas thing they did in the early 80s. And it just all sort of fell in place, to be honest with you.
Obviously, our solicitors will excrete that out of the mix there, readers, so you won't hear that.
No need to Slade. I think Slade nicked it off Beethoven or something like that, so I don't think
yeah, but
there
Beethoven
is.
Was dead by then.
Dead can't sue. Absolutely. Well, anyway,
still very much alive, you know?
But Dave Hill's haircut has been dead for years.
Yeah, but two wrongs don't make a Steve right.
No, absolutely. Spot on there.
I think what you've nailed there in your Christmas song is recording it in December.
Yeah.
I think it was a masterstroke. I think it'll bomb for an Easter song with the lyrics such as they are. But actually, serious note, I think it is pure Eurovision.
Yeah, it is essentially, isn't it?
It's got, you could be wearing lederhosen with that little penny whistle thing at the beginning there. It's just...
How do you know I wasn't wearing lederhosen when I recorded it?
Because your wife wears the lederhosen in your house, Ralph. We all know that.
Absolutely right. Yes, absolutely true. But I think the thing for me is it's keeping that Christmas song really, really simple. It's dead simple, that thing. It's like three chords. I think in the past I've been thinking to myself, I've got to do something a bit more sophisticated, using different chords, different tunings and all that. And on this, it was just keep it dead simple. And in terms of the lyrics as well, I was particularly impressed with myself, if I do say so, rhyming December with Blender.
Blender. And that was by your granna Blender, wasn't it? And that
line,
which is, haunting. Up for a... Oh, it was, well, yes. Well, the stuff is nightmares, as really.
Bernie Turnip, couldn't have come up with something as good as that.
Bernie Turnip,
yeah.
And you're hoping to get sponsorship from Argos as well, aren't you?
Well, yeah, perhaps not. Yeah. Going on about the queues is probably not something they're into. But the precise rhyme was, the recession bites hard this December. Can you afford to buy your gran a new blender?
Oh,
and really,
awesome.
That's... Dylan-esque. All the greatest lyric writers couldn't come up with something like that.
Well,
and that took literally seconds.
There's simply less to that than meets the eye. Really.
Yeah, there is, absolutely.
And you can tell it's original because you wouldn't find Blender in a rhyming dictionary for December, would you?
No, you wouldn't. To be honest with you, and it's pioneering work. I like to think, but But in terms of the recording, you know, looking at the technical side of the recording, what I really did with that was that I went for the Addictive Drums pattern that I thought sort of suited that pace of song, relatively slow beats per minute. I think it was 70 beats per minute. So I got the drum pattern, and then I edited the drum pattern around the sort of chords I put together, and the melodies just sort of fell into place. And then I think the next thing I added was the guitar, the acoustic guitar, then a bit of bass, as I recall, and then I went for the electric rhythm, which I just basically did the odd power chord on the electric rhythm. And thankfully the guitar, the Variax, stayed in tune for long enough to record it. And then I added a few bits of keyboards. I used Purity for the keyboards, and I used one of the arpeggiators, which gave quite a nice Christmassy effect.
So you start, so you just laid the Addictive drum track down first then? No, you didn't do a rhythm track or know where you were going. You just picked the drum track you liked first and then started from there.
Really, that's like my click track. I can't really work to a click track. The click just doesn't keep me in time. So actually playing two drums does keep me in time. Yeah. So I played to a basic pattern that was just repeated, a verse pattern, all the way through. And then once the actual song was in place, I then edited the drum pattern to include, you know, the odd fill and things like that. But, yeah, I find Addictive Drums really, really easy to use, although Les has taken it one step further with his editing patterns.
Well, he would, wouldn't he?
He would, he always does.
Well, he's got rhythm.
Yeah. Yeah, get rhythm.
Rhythm in the soul. He's rhythm and blues king. Is
rhythm,
our
rhythm and booze.
But yeah. Rhythm and blues. Yeah.
Booze.
Booze. But well, actually, if a little bit of trivia there, that's how Kate Bush, when she was getting pally with Pete Gabriel around the So album, that's how they were doing their writing, wasn't it? Because I remember seeing an article, or was it just that I bumped into Pete Gabriel down in Argos?
Lives near your way, doesn't he? Yeah.
He lives next door. Me and Pete.
Yeah.
Me and Pete are like that. I read an article on Gabriel, and Gabriel said that he was limited by, if he went to the piano, he would pick his favourite chords. If he went to the guitar, he'd do favourite phrases, etc., etc. So he liked the freedom of just writing a song to a drum box, basically. So there.
Because those sort of early 80s albums he did were very much sort of sparse sound, weren't they? And I do remember hearing a story that he got Phil Collins to drum on his third solo album and said no cymbals, which must have been quite a shock for the, you know, for Phil, because I guess he's been using cymbals for his entire drumming career. So if you listen to that album, there's no cymbals on it. It's just all drum fills which don't end with a ch.
Which is the exact opposite to obviously the Led Zeppelin fourth album there, which wasn't the No Cymbals album.
No. We interrupt this broadcast to give a health warning about the joke that you just heard. That actually isn't a Swanee whistle. It's David Claridge actually has those kind of noises just inbuilt in his body for health and safety reasons.
I'm like, who's that guy that used to do the percussion on his body round? American guy. Or is he?
I knew some people who did percussion on other people's bodies.
But you live in Liverpool.
Yeah, they were bouncers in nightclubs in Liverpool, Pete. Yeah. Bobby McFerrin, you're thinking of.
That's it, Bobby McFerrin. That's the one, yeah.
You don't really hear of him anymore, but he was quite pioneering, I think, wasn't he? Until he died. Be happy. Did he die?
He died of it. Yeah, he bruised himself to death. He was sent to prison for GBH to himself.
Out on a roll, didn't he?
He did what, Pete?
He went out on a roll.
Wasn't that Elvis? Oh no, that was a bap, wasn't it? Or no, that was all those number ones.
Oh, absolutely.
Sorry, and it was a number two that killed him.
That's Les's alarm clock going off. He's got to go to a shift in Argos now.
He's got another redundancy payment coming in.
So are you actually going to play my Christmas track then before we digress any further, Mr. Claridge?
Yes, here it is, ladies and gentlemen. Straight from the archives from Nottingham is Ralph's Christmas number one.
Thank you.
this December. Can you afford to buy your gran a new blender? We know what we've got to do, so just get out and try to give your all this Christmas. Just give.
what's the next? Go on, over to Mr. DJ Claridge then.
Hey, turn out nice again. The next number on the Strawberry Folds podcast is going to be David Claridge. Hey! With his song about his back garden.
Yes, I would like to introduce myself now as the main event of the evening, Pop Pickers, and a song that I wrote about my back garden, basically, called, funny enough, The Garden.
There's a path that leads to a garden. There's a road that leads to nowhere. There's a stone that rests on the water from a switch when you're unaware. There's a memory on every corner. There's a rumor along every line. A silver man sitting in judgment doesn't know he's clutching time. There's a girl, there's a boy, there's a world, there's a joy. There's a girl, there's a boy, there's a world. There's a joy. There's a road that leads nowhere.
Very good.
I actually wrote one about a little yard we had at the back when, you know, and it was, I called it my back passage, but it never really caught off.
So, chaps, what did you think of that? Warts and all. Give it to me.
I think it was an excellent effort. I think one of your best so far, to be honest with you. Very, very slick production. What do you reckon, Les?
Oh, sorry.
Les?
Just got to go to the door. Somebody at the front door. Hang on.
Oh, right.
It's at Radio 1, do you?
That doesn't happen at Abbey Road, does it? You know,
no. It's just not good enough, is it?
Anyway, so where were we, gentlemen? You were just about to compliment me on my massive hit to be.
What your tuning was.
In what? In the garden?
Yeah. What the guitar tuning was.
It was.
It's normal.
I think it was open G.
Was it?
I think it might have been.
it was Jay Shooting. Tuning.
It's a really nice tuning. I mean, I think it's worth saying that playing in different tunings for me was like a major breakthrough on playing the guitar.
Yeah,
I think absolutely. Once I started retuning, it just opened up a whole new thing of not sort of necessarily sticking to the set routine of playing this chord and that chord, and it just sounds so much better in open tuning sometimes, doesn't it?
Well, for me, actually tuning really did open my eyes to a whole world of tuneful songs, really.
Tuning the guitar generally.
Just tuning the guitar and changing strings once every 10 years, I felt added just to something, a little sparkle to the acoustic work there.
Do it regularly, don't you? Yeah. Les is back.
Are you with us, Les?
Indeed. Can you hear me?
Now, dare we ask, for the purpose of the benefit of the recording and the listeners at home, who was at the front door, Les?
My wife.
Doesn't she have a key?
She did, but I had to explain that if she could hear strange men in my bedroom upstairs.
Well, I'm going to get back to the garden and say I didn't think much of it. I put this acoustic thingy down, and then I had the idea. I'm like the lyrics because they're not too obvious, and basically all it is a, you know, I thought, right, there's a back garden out there. What's gone on in the back garden from the kids growing up to grandparents, you know, the old family barbecues, you know, where it rained and you didn't go out in the garden at all, you sat indoors, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's all in there and it's all a bit subtle, so it's not too obvious, but I know what it means. And and then I recorded it and I thought, right, that's got a nice clear acoustic guitar. And I put the bagpipes on and I thought, that's crap. So I sat on it for about 3 months, and then I added a bit of strings again, this purity, and also that lovely Hammond organ thing, Ralph. What was the software? I can't remember.
Oh, that VCS3 VST, isn't it? It's nice.
Yeah, fantastic. So strings coming out slightly panned to right channel, the Hammond organ sound through a Leslie Rotary, you know, mock speaker, virtual speaker in the left channel, and also a flute. I do struggle. I haven't got a good flute sound. I want a good sort of vibrato flute sound. And I ain't got one, so it had to be low in the mix. But when I put all those together, it started to grow on me a bit. So basically, I think it's marvellous, and I don't care whether you like it or not, especially you, Ralph Tong, with your adverse reaction to bagpipes.
I do definitely think it's an exceptional effort. I really do. And the bagpipes have grown on me. I think the first time I heard it with the bagpipes, they were pretty full on in the mix. And I think they're just about right now, to be honest with you. Joking aside, but in terms of the flute, have you tried the Mellotron flute on the Abbey Road Reason plugins? They're amazing.
No.
I think, have you got those, Les?
Just to add to that, there's a free VST plugin called Redtron, R-E-D-Tron, and it's a fantastic Mellotron.
Right.
I can't believe it's free, to be honest, but it is. And they've got all the flute sounds and everything else in there.
Oh, I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, Redtron.
The only difficulty with those Mellotron flutes is as soon as you hear them, you think Strawberry Fields.
Yes, you do, yeah.
And it's very, very tied to that one song, isn't it? And using them in a different way is probably quite a challenge.
But did you say it was free, Les?
I did say it was free, yes.
And what do we do when we get a free one? Thank you.
Right, have you got some sort of sound effects man or your dad or someone just on standby with all these things?
What else can I bang? Go on, Pete. Come on.
Based on Les's recommendation, I'm actually downloading it as we speak now.
Is he? Is he multitasking?
Yeah. The power of the internet. Him.
What's it called? Redtron.
Redtron. Red as in postbox, and Tron as in Tron.
Ah, right.
I tell you, this is going to be worse than mixing down the Get Back sessions, isn't it?
what I do like about this Redtron, it's got lots of different types of Mellotron built in, and also there's a preset menu where you can blend two types together, and it gives a really big sound.
Right. Good.
I'll have to have a look for that one.
I go at it when I'm... Yeah, have a go at it next time I need a Mellotron.
It's also very easy to install. You just literally drag and drop the DLL file, the Redtron DLL, into your VST folder, and job's done.
Yeah. Good. So, yeah, a big thumbs up for the garden then there, Mr. Claridge.
Yes, yes, I like the garden too. I think it's very nice, nice sound to that. Nice sort
bit of a hippy-trippy thing, isn't it? But and actually, you know when Ralph was saying about that he lays the addictive drums sound down first, I think that's what I've got to do. I've got to steel myself and say, right, I've got to do something a bit up-tempo, because as soon as I pick up the acoustic, especially if it's open G tuning or something or other, I just go wafting away in this sort of Simon and Garfunkel haze, mellowness.
Talking to Bjorn about this the other day, and I really find that if you put a decent drum track down to start with, it can actually drive the whole song, and it can drive your
absolutely.
Sort of inspiration, if you will. Because it
drive
makes
you mad
differently. You know, it makes you play sort of slightly behind the beat, slightly in front of the beat, a bit more funky kind of thing, you know.
No, you're absolutely right, Les. I think I discovered that when I first got into addictive drums, and I recorded something. I think it was a cover of No Time to Lose, the old Lindisfarne track, and I suddenly realised that playing along to what feels like, you know, a real drummer does make all the difference, rather than to a click track, which never really worked for me.
It does.
Actually, I've got a question for you, Les.
Yeah.
Backing vocals.
Yes.
Do you, to get them tight, and what reminded me of this was the Lindisfarne, and you know, what is it, Clear White Light or whatever, you know, that open leg harmony beginning with about 8 voices in there.
Yeah.
Now, you know, that do you believe Clear White Light, and there's a T at the end of there, but only the lead vocal is singing to the last syllable, isn't he? Everything else is rolled off, otherwise you end up with loads, unless they get it note perfect, unless
that's,
they get it
right.
Timing perfect, you end up with this.
That's correct, yeah. What I tend to do, I'll record the backing vocal straight through, and then I'll review it later, and I'll decide what I'm going to roll off. Quite often I'll roll off the first syllable. And if you just, again, this comes down to mixing it live. I actually throw the fader up in real time as I'm mixing it to bring it in, and then fade it out, as you say, just before the last syllable. And it gives a really smooth
edge. You're ducking, Liz, aren't you? You're ducking.
Ducking and diving, probably.
Yeah, exactly. Excellent. Another top tip from Les. What do we do when we hear a top tip, pop pickers?
This is a professional setup, this, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, are we going to listen to something
Sony
from
Awards? Seconds, I think.
Yeah, the Pulitzer Prize, please, Pete. Come on. Are we going to listen to something from our literally sleeping partner, Mr. Dick Greener?
No, I think we'll do. Let's do Pete now. He needs
to.
Yeah. So, I thank you.
Which
all right,
one of Pete's tracks are we going to do?
There's literally millions of them, but. The one he's recorded, or the tune that I think is wonderful, is So Long Ago by Pete Randy O'Rand of No Fixed Haircut in Merseyside. So, Pete.
Yeah.
Tell us about the tune, Pete, baby.
The tune, I started off with some addictive drums, and then some isotope ozone sort of came in there. And obviously, I ducked the vocals. And it sort of all came together. It was
I think
just
you're quite right, Pete. I think what is very interesting about the addictive drums is setting to the volume of zero, nobody could hear them.
That's what I actually use at the Strawbs Christmas party. I don't know if you noticed it. It's a very subtle effect. It was just a little piano ditty that that I knocked off from a bloke down the market. He was playing it, and I thought, yeah, I'll have that. And, thanks to Mr. Claridge, who put some very nice words to it, it sounds half decent, you know.
I tell you what I like about it is that, now, if we played it next to Les's is a full-on production, is absolutely fantastic, but I think the beauty of that it isn't. And it isn't fantastic either. No, is that it's a simple, easy message, isn't it? It's like one keyboard. There's this tiny little, it's not even lead guitar, it's a tiny little Fender Strat in there, panned one side, and then the words. There's no middle eight, there's no nothing. And like I think, Les, you said it'd be great if we expanded that, but I actually think, no, it's just a little vignette there. And Pete, you gave me the inspiration on the lyrics, and they just, you knocked it off on the keyboard, and I knocked it off orally, and to speak.
And,
it is total knockoff, basically.
Yeah.
And, but it's a beautiful little thing. Here it comes.
thousand winters waiting for the snow. A face that has all my reflections granted so long ago. Why did you scream and tear at me without a cry? When did you curse me for everything? Now the time is mine. I dream that you were me for all of time. Life in rivers played out silently. Won't someone turn back time so long ago?
Beautifully simplistic, Pete Rand, very much like your good self.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that. I take that as a compliment.
I think the thing about that particular song I like is the fact it's short and sweet. It doesn't need to go anywhere else. It doesn't need extending with...
Thank God for that, that's what I thought.
No, seriously, I think it's like one of those little songs like Hey Little Man that the Strokes did on Grave New World, or Never Thought I'd Live to Be a Million that the Moody Blues did. Just little songs that slot in between other tracks on concept albums, you know. It was perfect.
Yeah.
It did have a certain... What do you call that thing that the White Stripes go for, where they use like retro studios or something like that? It's like an earthy, you know, is it tube sound, Les? Come on, I'm looking for some technical description here.
White noise, that's what you call it.
No. I mean that sort of valve amplifier, you know, transistors and rather than computers sort of sound.
It did have that analog type of sound.
Analog, that's the word I'm looking for.
That's
the
word. Analog.
And it also had that one man in one room with a guitar singing sound, which we do stray away from sometimes, don't we?
I certainly do.
Yeah, and it's a real pity. Yeah. I have to be really, really honest. I've got Les Cotton to thank for getting me into home recording. Because I bought the Zoom MRS-4, I think it was called, four-track digital recorder.
That's
from Les.
Clip on you. Is that the one you could clip on your belt, that small little piece?
No. It's not. It was one. It was essentially like a 1970s calculator, right. In sort of, probably a little bit bigger, more like an effects pedal. It was a great start into recording.
It looks very much like a mini version of the Zoom that you have, David.
Right, the R8 one, or whatever it was, the MS.
But
and this is Zoom.
Interesting historical note. I recorded Shoreline on that.
Did you?
I did indeed. Ralph also bought the drum machine that went with it, which was the Zoom, I can't remember the number now, RT something drum machine.
All right.
And you could actually
sync.
That's
why it's called Ralph Tong, is it?
Yeah.
You could actually sync the drum machine up to the MRS4 using MIDI. So every time you pressed the return to zero on the tape controls, it would start the drum track again. And that's how I did Shoreline, just with a very simple drum loop.
Right.
So,
but I'll tell you what, I had a drum machine. I had a, is it a TRS, something like an 808? What was it called? Was it a TRS?
Oh, the 808, the legendary 808. Yeah.
It was a Roland one, wasn't it? Was
well,
it
that's the one that the band's named after. 808 Stator named after that.
Oh, are they? Yeah. I remember that was quite good. That was quite a good little drum kit, that.
You can get VSTs of them as well.
Yeah, so Ralph started with that setup. And I actually started a lot further back than that when I was about 14, which was a hell of a long time ago.
78 RPM.
Yeah. No, he was shellac, wasn't it? Or Bakelite, yeah. you were recording onto at that stage. So direct to disc.
I had one of very early cassette recorders, you know, like the
Tandy Realistic.
That's right, the very same. And I actually rigged up a microphone on that and recorded my acoustic guitar with that. And I figured out a way that I could bypass the recording head so I could overdub a second guitar, which was all very clever, but you couldn't listen to the original guitar when you played the second one, which was a bit tricky, really.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, that was the way that Mike Oldfield did his demos for Tubular Bells. Oh. Same method, right, with a reel-to-reel, and he covered over the record head, and so just overdubbed.
And that was the way McCartney brought in the tape loops for being for the benefit of Mr. Kite. He did all the funky tape loops at home and he just rejigged the head so he could just saturate the tape, one end of sloop. Yeah. And they brought them in and they rigged them up via all the machines in Abbey Road, didn't they? And because that was what they were saying, it was one mix, you couldn't ever reproduce it because they were all sort of looping it around different machines, different studios, hooked onto wine glasses, etc., etc. But they're all tape loops that McCartney had, and George Martin makes his story that he just chucked them all up in the air and just said, right, pick them off the floor. I don't really think they would have done it like that, really, do you?
I don't know. You know? It's possible. It's a possibility. Think of the drugs that were wafting around at the time.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I actually had a cassette very early on, a cassette recorder, which just didn't work properly, which had the same effect, basically, as what Les was just describing. So managed to produce some really astonishing guitar things on that, because you don't know what you're recording over, do you, when you do it? But it was fun. At one minute in every seven sounded about right, which is, you know, it's a ratio I've kept throughout my life.
And was that pre-keyboard days, Pete? Was that
that was
guitar
pre-keyboard
days?
Well, actually, no, I did have a little sort of that's where I'm going. But not like these days. No, it was nothing fancy. But that was in the days of guitars and mandolins and God knows what, an auto harp as well.
Okay, thanks, Pete. Thanks, guys. Hope you folks enjoyed it. Cheers.